Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati,
you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast.
All the news from the world of boxing
right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorda, and I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib. We got a great show for you today, and if you want to call and ask questions, call in right now at 323-870-3857, and we'll be here till about 8 or 8:30 tonight. Just depends. We got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff to cover, actually. So tonight, we're going to talk about Pauly Malignaggi being fired from Showtime. I don't know, B, you know the time. I don't know that he was actually fired, per se, from Showtime.
He's fired.
Well, they're going to honor his contract, I heard. I heard they're going to let him glide through his contract. I mean, but he won't be on any telecast. So I guess for lack of a better term, you're fired. I don't know. Teofimo Lopez holding out for more money for a Lomachenko fight. Guys, Top Rank, you guys got to get it together over there, man. I tell you what, man, because this is not the climate for it, man. You can't hold out for more money now. I mean, not with no gates or anything like that. And I heard that fight could actually take place on Showtime, but more on that later. Not Showtime, but ESPN, I'm sorry. But more on that later. First, we're going to get started with on Showtime, Tremaine Williams versus Angelo Leo. This was a one-sided main event, man. Angelo Leo wins the unanimous decision over Tremaine Williams by the scores of 117, 111, 118, 110 twice. I thought Leo just outworked him, man. I thought he went to the body. I thought he was just aggressive. I thought he hit harder. I just thought he dominated the fight. I really did. And, this was a tall order for Williams.
He's got quick hands, too.
Like, yeah, he does.
He's quick.
Yeah, Williams was scheduled to fight friend of the show, Raisa Aleem. But he was called up for the main event when Stephen Fulton was diagnosed with COVID. So this was a tough – I mean, from going to fighting Raisa Aleem to fighting Angelo Leo – in the sense that, you got to get prepared for a whole different guy, And Tremaine Williams has a lot to lose in this fight. He's a lot to gain, but he has a lot to lose, But, hey, hats off to him. I mean, he took the challenge. He took, this is what we like to see guys do. Unfortunately, it's bad when it doesn't work out for him, but this is what we like to see guys do. And hopefully he'll make it back, get a shot again or whatever, but yeah, he might have been better off fighting Raisa Aleem, but the way Raisa looked, I don't think so, man. Raisa looked like a killer out there. So Angelo Leo wins the fight. They interviewed, I guess, Stephen Fulton after the fight. I guess those two were next. So we'll see what happens there. Any thoughts on Angelo Leo? I mean, I thought it was he's a good fighter. Obviously he's a good fighter, but the fight kind of was a little one-sided, man.
One-sided. Obviously, you want to see him in there with better competition or someone that's going to actually push him and test him, but a lot of potential, a lot of promise, and he can fight. He can definitely fight.
Yeah.
He's sharp. He's a sharp kid.
Yeah, that body work that he does, that's something that either you got sometimes, I think either you got it or you don't, because a lot of people just leave it. You know what I mean? They don't,
Once again, going back to the fighting inside, it's all about body positioning. It's all about fighting small. It's all about angles and stepping off to the side and keeping your head outside your opponent's shoulder and just being able to dig and place those shots properly.
Yeah. 'Cause
you could break your hand in there if you hit the guy in the elbow.
Yeah. I mean,
elbow is one of the hardest parts of the body. So you got to know how to place those shots right, or you can hurt your hand. You can break your hand. You could be sidelined for a while. So, real accurate with the shots, place the shots beautifully, and I can't say anything bad about his performance last night at all. I thought it was pitchy perfect.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to pick that performance apart, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know. All right, so let's talk about Rais Aleem versus Marcus Bates, friend of the show. Rais Aleem wins the tenth round TK over Marcus Bates. You know, Bates, he was content to counterpunch the whole fight. That's kind of his style. But Aleem, to me, was just too much for him. He was too skilled, too fast, just all around a better fighter, I thought.
It's so hard to be a counterpuncher against a guy who's much faster than you because you're never going to get the timing down.
Well, much faster and much busier. If you're able to counter him, but he stays busy, you know, listen, man, the name of the game, it's the amount of punches that you're throwing. And if you're not willing to throw a lot of punches and you're content to counter, then you better be one of those guys that shut people's offense down, you know, like a Pernell Whitaker, like a Bernard Hopkins, like a Floyd Mayweather. Those guys can shut you down, even though they may not throw the most punches in a round. They'll take a guy who that's all he does is throw and throw and throw, and they will shut him down. It's a different kind of defense that they put on you, you know. And unfortunately, that just wasn't the case here with Aleem and Bates. Now, it looked like and I didn't get a report or anything like that of what happened to Bates. It looked almost like he hurt his arm. That shot that did it was a body shot that straight looked like it hit him on the elbow. He was already shaking his hand. And so it did look like he hurt his hand or whatever, but I don't know, man. That was that's when he went down. He got hit with that left, and that was it.
I thought they said he hurt his wrist.
That's what it looked like. I mean, he hit his elbow, but I know it looked like he hit his elbow, and then he just kind of like went. You know, he walked away, and then he got hit with that left or whatever. And then they stopped the fight, but then you could see him going down and like holding his arm. So maybe it was his wrist.
He was kind of holding his wrist, so I'm thinking maybe he...
One of those broken or sprained or what, you know?
Yeah, it was damaged. He must have landed a punch the wrong way or something like that. I mean, I don't know,
man, because, that was, but he was getting beat anyway. I mean, that fight, I mean, Aleem was really beating him, so not much. Notorious VC in the chat says, talk about Cheeseman, we're all here for the cheese. before we talk about him, man, on the undercard there, Joe George versus Marcos Escudero. Did you see this knockout? This so far has to be like the knockout of the year, right?
Yes.
It was ridiculous, man.
It was insane.
Joe George in the ninth round caught Marcos Escudero with one of the most brutal shots you're likely to see. It was a left uppercut. Escudero never saw it. The worst part about this, Beeb, is that it was an empty room. You know what I mean? There was no audience there. And you just heard that thud when he hit the canvas. It was like, you know.
Ba-boom.
Yeah, you heard it. I mean, and typically you don't hear him because of the audience and stuff like that. But, yeah, this time you heard it, man. It was, it was vicious, man. So, but I'm sure he's okay and everything like that. But yeah, that guy looked good, man. What they said was 31st birthday or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy, that was a one heck of a birthday present.
Yeah.
All right. On YouTube, Spriciket Sorungvisai versus I'm Not Ruin Wrong. You know, I was looking forward to this fight and I saw it and Sorungvisai wins via unanimous decision over Ruin Wrong by the scores of 97-94. 96, 93, and 99, 91. Ruin Wrong is definitely in the twilight of his career. He's still fast, but, Rungvisai was just way too much for him. I heard a lot of people saying this fight was close. It was competitive. I'll say this. I thought it was competitive, but I didn't think it was close. I thought Rungvisai put way too much pressure on that guy, hit him with shots. I mean, he was just pressuring him all night. Ruin Wrong was backing up the entire night, not really being effective while he's backing up. It was just one of those things. To me, it was like, I don't know. He was being competitive, but he wasn't winning the fight. You know what I mean? He was holding. It wasn't like, you know, you could have stepped in at any point and stopped it. He was just being competitive. So, yeah. So, Rungvisai wins, and he moves on. All right. So, the fight everybody's here for on DAZN. Beeb said the fight of the week. Sam Eggington.
By far the fight of the week.
Versus Ted Cheeseman. Cheeseman wins by unanimous decision over Eggington, 116-113 twice, and 115-114. Beeb, take it away.
I have given Cheeseman so much stick over the last couple of years. And
right.
He rose to the occasion yesterday. He fought a beautiful fight. You know, neither one of these guys will ever be confused for Pennell Whitaker or Sugar Ray Leonard. They're not defensive specialists.
Right.
Cheeseman really tightened up his defense. He's never going to be a slick guy. We know that. But he kept his hands high, and he was actually catching shots, and he was, you know, counter-punching in this fight, which is something I'm not used to seeing him do. And he had a sneaky lead right hand that he hurt Eggington with on several occasions. And I think in the second round, he buckled him, and it almost looked like Eggington was going to go down. And every time Eggington hit him with a good shot, Cheeseman would come back with two or three solid ones himself. And his shots were the heavier blows. Like, Eggington was the worst for wear after those exchanges. Because Cheeseman showed a great chin, which we already knew he had. But Cheeseman was really sharp with the punches, with the counter punching and that sneaky lead right hand. He was shortening shots. His shots were straighter, tighter, more compact. And in this fight, he wasn't loading up. In other fights, I've seen him load up, try too hard to be too aggressive to get the knockout. Cheeseman was really setting shots up. He was throwing soft shots and then landing a hard one after a couple of soft ones. So he was using some soft shots to open Eggington up, and boom came that right hand. So I just thought Cheeseman fought really intelligently, very poised. Eggington was dropping his hands a lot. He was real leaky defensive-wise yesterday, where Eggington fought the best fight defensively I've ever seen him fight, because he wasn't getting hit with consecutive shots. He'd get hit once with a good shot, and he would cover up right away. He would make the adjustment and then see it coming the second time. So this was the best Cheeseman I've ever seen. This was a really solid win. I actually thought Eggington was going to beat Cheeseman, but I was wrong. So I got to give Cheeseman a lot of credit. This was a great performance from him. And he won. I would say he won probably at least 8 rounds in this fight. I thought it was like an eight rounds of four-tech fight. Maybe a nine to three, but the rounds were hotly contested. It was one of those fights where the scorecard would reflect that it was a wide decision or a clear cut decision. But Cheeseman had to work for every round because Eggington was there every round, and he just couldn't take the play away from Cheeseman. So some of these rounds were really competitive in spots. But Cheeseman just came on strong, and he finished him strong, and he just would not give Eggington no quarter in this fight. So you got to give him credit. This was a great performance. It was back and forth. It was action-packed. Both guys were exchanging very well, and it was just one of those exciting-type fights. This fight, I told you, I think last week when we went over the schedule, this is a good fight. This is going to be a good fight because of the two styles. You may not think that these two guys are the greatest fighters in the world. They're definitely good fighters, don't get me wrong. But they're not upper echelon guys.
Right.
But that doesn't matter sometimes when you put two guys who are at the same level, who have styles that mesh well, that could make for an exciting fight. And this was a very exciting fight all the way through from start to finish.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. These guys aren't the most well-known guys, put it that way. And it's not really the fight that I think a lot of people wanted to see. Especially because we're kind of starved. We want to see a big fight. We want to see like a Showtime main event caliber fight, you know, and so far we haven't got it, you know. But this was, I think we both knew that it was going to be competitive. I didn't think the fight was going to be like that. But so we were all pleasantly surprised, I think.
Yeah, it's a good fight.
Yeah, sure. All right, guys, let's go to, before we move on here, in Mexico this weekend, friends of the show, Chavez and Angel Barrientos and also DJ Zamora fought this weekend. The Barrientos twins both won by first round KO. DJ Zamora was on the card and he won by second round KO. So those two guys are moving up, man. They're fighting. They're going to fight often as often as they can, I think. And they're doing very well. So hey, we'll keep following him and keep letting you know. All right, so let's move on to the upcoming fights here real quick. Let's see here. On August 7th, all I can say, I tell you what, all I can say for the upcoming fight schedule is thank God for the PBC. You know, and listen, man, maybe a lot of people don't like them, maybe, but look, man, they are putting on the best fights right now. Or not, right?
The schedule speaks for itself.
Right? I mean, that's it. They're putting on the best fights you could ask for right now. So, August 7th in Brentwood, England on DAZN, Terry Harper versus Natasha Jonas, 10 rounds for Harper's WBC Junior Lightweight World title. On the undercard, Chris Billiam-Smith versus Nathan Thorley, 12 rounds for Billiam-Smith's Commonwealth Cruiserweight title. That's a tough one. That's a tough one, man. That's a tough card. August 8th on in Los Angeles on Fox, Jamal James, friend of the show, versus Thomas Delorme, 12 rounds for the vacant WBA interim welterweight title. Our guy's right there. He's knocking on the door. How about that? David Morrell versus Lennox Allen, 12 rounds for the vacant WBA interim super middleweight title. Omar Juarez versus Willie Shaw, 8 rounds, junior welterweights. And we will pause it right there because how about this? Our special guest today, Beeb, none other than Omar Juarez. Omar, how are you?
I'm doing good, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Let me tell you what. I did, we were looking at, we heard you were going to be on today. And, you know, we've seen you fight a few times. You're not like any other fighter I've interviewed ever. I mean, there's something about this guy, Beeb, this guy is different. And I told Beeb before we went on the air, I said, you know, this guy doesn't remind me of a fighter. If I didn't know any better, like if I just, you know, talked to you one-on-one on the street, he sounds like a college professor, man. I mean, you talk to him, I mean, he sounds like a college professor or something like that. And you watch this guy in a ring and he's an animal. And I'm like, it's almost like Dr. Jekyll or something, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This guy is incredible, man. Where, I mean, this is insane. So this kid, Omar, all right, I'm going to try to get this. I'm Mexican, so I have no excuses for this. Relámpago, correct?
El Relámpago, yes, sir.
All right, that means, yeah, the lightning, right? And you're from Brownsville, Texas, sure. Which is, that's like El Paso, sure. Texas, correct? It's like a border town. Because, I mean,
it's
you go
town, but it's
yeah, all the way south. All the way south. Right. And
10 minutes away from the border.
Yeah. I mean, so you're right there. You don't get any more southern than that. So
yeah,
it's funny. When you hear Brownsville, I think of, like, Mike Tyson, Riddick Bowe. I think Brownsville, New York. I don't ever think of Brownsville, Texas. So is this it's a big city? It's not a big city. It's a small city? What is it?
It's growing, but 250,000 people is slowly growing, but you know, I want to be the first person to, you know, really put Brownsville on the map and show people that where Brownsville, Texas is located. Because I always go out to the tournaments, and you know, as an amateur, I would go out to the tournaments and I tell people where I'm from. And when I would tell them, you know, the south that you could go in Texas, they would tell me places that were about 4 hours away from my hometown. So it's crazy that nobody really knows where we're at. But you know, that's really my plan, to show that Brownsville, Texas is home. Mark Juarez.
Gotcha. What do you know about Willie Shaw? Omar, what do you know about your opponent on Saturday, Willie Shaw?
We've done our homework on him. He's 12-1. I'm not sure. I think he's from Oakland. He loves to hit and move. You know, he likes to play safe. So this fight, I'm gonna have to be applying a lot of pressure. We've been working on that all this month, and I mean, I'm more than ready. I've trained incredibly hard with my trainers, and we're more than ready for anything to go with hard 8 rounds. And I'm anxious. I really, really am. You know, it's been 6 months since I've been in the ring, so I got really used to that. You know, they were keeping me busy, but it was just I gave it time to, you know, recover from everything. I still stayed active and everything. I was maintaining my shape, staying ready for that call. But as soon as they told me, all right, you're gonna fight in about a month and a half, I was more than ready, mentally, physically, emotionally. I was like, let's do this.
How hard has this break been for you? Because like I said, you're an active guy, and then this the COVID thing hits. You're going to be on the shelf for a little bit, as is everybody. How did this affect you? How is it? I mean, how has it been for you? How have you stayed busy? I mean, what have you done?
I mean, it was difficult at first, you know, very, very limited resources. You know, they closed down the track, they closed down the swimming center, they closed down a lot. I was there training in my house. You know, we had to do what we had to do. As long as I stayed active, as long as I was, you know, getting in my, it's not really that hard. You got to get in your road work. You got to put in your miles. You got to do your rounds and bags. You got to do what you got to do. I mean, it was different doing it at home, staying home, but I try to look at it in a positive mindset. You know, I was with my family, which we rarely are together. You know, we're always all over the place. Six of us in total, four siblings, and we're always all over the place. We're always busy. So it took me time to really just accept it. You know, just accept that, you know, we're gonna be here for quite a while, not really know how long, but I had to stay busy, had to stay active. And, you know, I'm just blessed. I'm just blessed that I get this opportunity this coming Saturday. I'm excited. I really am.
Now you started boxing at the age of 8. I mean, so you, sure. So how did you, I mean, like, did you, like, when you grew, but you, I mean, you were like a, what, 120 amateur fights? Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. 120.
All right, so 120 amateur fights. So you're, I mean, like, constantly fighting, you know, coming up and everything like that. Did you have time to, like, just kind of be a kid or be, you know, I mean, like, when you were in school? You know what I'm saying? I mean, because it sounded like you're almost always fighting, you know?
Yeah, I get you. I did at first, you know, I totally understand what you mean. You know, I remember coming back from the bus and seeing, you know, all my neighborhood friends with their bikes and everything, but I really didn't get to enjoy that. You know, I had a mission. I had a plan. My father was always on to us with that, and I thank him every day for it, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be the man I am today. And I love this sport. I absolutely do love it. I wouldn't change anything. You know, it's built my character. It built me to the person I am today, and I'm glad I stuck with it. I really do. But, you know, I did it, but I did in a way. You know, it just made me different, and that's what I love about the sport. It made me different than everybody else.
Now, did I read this right? Did you lose your first 10 amateur fights?
Yes, sir. My first amateur fight, I was knocked down twice. I was crying. You know, my dad wasn't there to see me because he was a truck driver. And basically, the sport was telling me to quit. You know, it was hard. It really was. I was more of a mama's boy. I just didn't like to get hit. That was really my style, what got me so far in the sport. I just did not like to get hit, and my first 10 fights, I wasn't ready to be competing, but I fought anybody and anybody that was my weight, I would fight them, and I got dropped, I cried, I've thrown up before and after the fight, you know, it's everything, but really, I just chose to never give up, always chase my dreams, and I feel like that's what helped me a lot. You know, I chose my dream, and I protected it, and that's what got me so far in life.
How do you come back from that, though? Like, did you want to quit? I'm sure it crossed your mind that you were going to quit.
Oh,
Where did you draw from? How did you turn that situation around?
It was almost every day in training where I told myself, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? But, you know, I reminded myself, you know, I have so much people to prove wrong and the right people to prove right. You know, I have proved right my family to make proud, and I just love that the sport made me different. I love that the sport was building my character. For some apparent reason, it's something unexplainable, but I began to be more disciplined in school, not just in school, but in life. It just gave me so much confidence, and I would walk around. Before boxing, I was a completely shy person. Once I got more comfortable with boxing at the age of 16, I started doing motivational speaking. I started doing so much stuff that 8-year-old Omar Juarez wouldn't think I would do. So that's why I'm so in love with this sport, because it's really built the character that I am today.
So when you do that motivational speaking to kids who are down and out, kids who don't have much hope, do you use that? Like, I lost my first 10 amateur fights. Beat up. If I can come back from this, you guys can come back from whatever you're coming back from. Is that kind of like one of your one of your opening lines when you do your motivational speaking?
Yeah, I mean, I do mention that, but, you know, I tell them really what I go speak about is I talk to them. I don't go advertise boxes. I would never, I wouldn't even.
Yeah, you don't want to push that on somebody. Yeah,
it's one of the toughest and loneliest sports in the world, and it's scary. It really is. But what I tell them is their main priority is their goal. And I give them six key principles that I've followed ever since I was a little boy on how to achieve their goals, which are confidence, discipline, self-worth, strategy, teamwork, and one of the most important ones was it was confidence, discipline, strategy, teamwork, self-worth, and I haven't gone in a while. But yeah, well, those are the five that I basically go and I explain to them how boxing has helped me cope with. Obviously, I had to go through education, so I had to do both at the same time. And a lot of people are telling me that, oh, it's very hard. I can't do anything extracurricular. I tell them anything is possible as long as you put your dream as a priority. And I started explaining how boxing has given me the confidence, giving me the discipline. I have the right team. As long as you have a strategy, as long as you're following your game plan, as long as you're self-worth, you believe in yourself, no matter what, it's going to happen. A lot of people aren't going to believe in you. I give stories upon story upon story, and the feedback you get, it's incredible. It really is. You know, I love doing what I do, and there's never a day where I say no. You know, I never charge when I go speak at the schools, and I'm always down to do anything. There's times where I have to show up at a school at 6 in the morning, and I have to spar the same day. So it's something that I love, and I'll never get up and just not want to do it. It's always something I want to do.
You should be charging these schools, Omar. You should be getting a lot of money for that. Let me tell you that right now. You should be getting a lot of money, I tell you what. Showing up at 6 a.m., I tell you what, I wouldn't do that. But that's just me, though. You know?
I want to talk about one fight. Go ahead.
No, I just feel that, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never feel like it's worth. You'll never work ever in your day if you feel like it's what you love. You know, it's just something that really got me through, you know, hard times in middle school, high school, through all the peer pressure, all the people that I thought would believe in me, did not believe in me, teachers, you know, family members, relatives, all those people that I thought believed in me, did not believe in me, did not see the dream the same way I did. Right. What helped me a lot was looking at YouTube videos, you know, by Eric Thomas, Mike Tyson, Cousin, a bunch of people. I would watch YouTube videos, and that's really what helped me going. You know, that's really what motivated me. A lot of people, you know, listen to music and everything, and as it is today, you know, I'm there listening to motivational speeches, and that's really what gets me going. So I felt, you know, it's words by this person, by this specific athlete, by this specific motivational speaker to me, it can really help me achieve my goals. I wonder what I could do. So I gave it a try at 16 years old. You know, my team and I, we got together. We came up with the five key principles on how to achieve your goals, and eventually I got so comfortable at it that everything just came from the heart. It was never staged. It was just everything that I've gone through in the sport of boxing and just life and overcoming everything. I'm still not done, but overcoming everything as a student, when I speak to them, I feel like I'm speaking to myself when I was smaller. That's why I have so much good feedback, because they tell me, you know, that's exactly what I'm going through. Nobody believes in me. You know, my cousins don't believe in me. My friends, they tell me to give up on my dream. You're the only person that believes in me. Stuff like that really, it often helps me. It also motivates me, and I feel like every time I step in the ring, I have a lot of people to prove right. You know, I promise them that I'm going to become the very first world champion from Brownsville, Texas, and every time I step in the ring, I feel very, very prideful, and I feel like I have a city behind me.
I want to talk about one fight that I think is forever going to be a highlight reel in your career. That's the Geno De La Paz fight with that right hand from hell.
Man,
talk about that fight. Did you ever envision being able to just land a shot like that in a fight and just put a guy out? He's practically out cold. That was like one of the best knockouts seen in a long time.
I think it's pausing a little bit.
Okay, there's going to be some latency there.
Could you repeat the question? I really.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I said that one fight that I think is going to be a highlight reel forever in your career is the Geno De La Paz fight. You landed that right hand. You landed that right hand from hell. Talk about how you felt when you landed that shot. Obviously, it must have been euphoric, but you going to think that you could land a perfect right hand like that and just, oh, like the guy was practically out.
Iced him.
That was like one of the best. That was one of the best knockouts I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people have asked me that question. A lot of people have asked me what happened. You know, that's not the fighter that you usually are. But really what happened that fight was I didn't personally know, you know, Gino or anything like that. I know he was just an hour away from my hometown. Saw interviews and there was a little bit of trash talking. I didn't say anything. I always keep my cool. I always do what I have to do and I show up the day of the fight. But, you know, I heard a lot of stuff that he was saying, but none of that got in my head. I continued doing what I do. But I saw, I believe it was after the weigh-ins where he was doing also an interview and he had told the interviewer everything that was, you know, everything that was given to him, I'm going to take away. And I thought that was, you know, I felt that was very disrespectful in a way of saying everything that I put, all the sacrifice, the blood, sweat, and tears that I put into the sport is basically nothing. That's where I guess it flipped a little switch inside of me. And that overhead right, you know, we were practicing it for 6 weeks, nonstop. Here in my training camp, we were practicing. Honestly, it was just muscle instinct. And as soon as I knocked him down, 15 seconds after what happened, I really don't remember anything. I really don't. I guess I was all that adrenaline, I really don't remember much. But it was overall an awesome night. And all I can say is that hard work pays off. It really does.
Absolutely.
What words do you have for Willie Shaw? Now, before I ask you that question now, like, you never get rattled. You seem like the kind of person that, like, never gets rattled. You know, I hear you talk and everything, and that's the one thing I noticed. The first thing I noticed about you is you're so calm and so cool. You know, I mean, just like ice, man, and, like, nothing bothers you, nothing takes you out of what you're in. You know what I mean? Is that just you, or is that just, I mean, is that something you developed, or how does that work, man?
That's just the way I was raised, you know, ever since, even when I box, I'm always comfortable, I'm always staying calm in any situation, whether it's speaking, whether it's doing whatever in life, you know, I'm just so used to getting out of my comfort zone that I've adapted to anything. I just know that hard work always pays off, and I know that if I put in blood, sweat, and tears in the training camp, everything's going to fall for him during the fight. I guess that's just the person that I am, you know?
Yeah.
It just comes natural.
So what message do you have for Willie Shaw on Saturday?
Oh, message, not really nothing, but I'm ready. I'm more than ready. I've never trained so hard in my life, physically, mentally, in the best shape of my life, and I'm ready to go 8 rounds, hard, 100%. I'm ready. I'm so anxious, so excited, and I've never been so excited for a fight before, and I believe this fight's going to be different. I'm going to display all of my skills out there, and I still feel like, you know, the boxing world hasn't seen 100% of Omar Juarez. I still believe that there's way more that I could explain to them.
I'm going to translate that for Willie Shaw. Willie, Omar says he is going to dice you up, son. He said he's knocking you out on Saturday. And you know what? There's nothing you can do about it. That's what he said. That's his words, not mine. I'm translating them. That's his words, not mine. He's knocking you out cold, son. That's what he's doing. All right, Omar, we're going to let you go, man. Thank you so much for coming on, man, and the best of luck to you on Saturday. Catch Omar on Instagram at I am Omar Juarez on Instagram. Yeah, I'm terrible at this. I'm terrible at the Instagram stuff. Better at Twitter, but it's all the same stuff, you know? It's all the same stuff. All right, my man. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you. Thank you, and good luck.
Good stuff.
Man, what a guy, man. What a guy. That guy, I tell you what, I told you he was different.
Yeah,
that's a different guy right there, man. That is a different guy.
These young kids that we have come on here, when we talk to them, they just don't have, they don't seem like fighters. They just seem like, you know, like college kids.
Right.
You know, they don't have that, that rough edge to them that you would expect the fighter to have sometimes,
right.
You know?
Beep, I got to be honest with you. You know, the young guys we interviewed, like the Barrientos and, you know, Raif Aleem and, you know, Omar Juarez, I got to be honest. I hate it. I hate interviewing these guys because they make me feel like such a failure in my life. You know, at 16 years old, this guy's doing motivational speaking. What were you doing at 16? What was I doing at 16?
Freaking drag racing.
Yeah, right. Right.
On the Lindmont Road.
Every time I interview one of these guys, my self-esteem just goes lower and lower and lower.
Pulled over by the cops for tinted windows. Oh, stupid shit.
I know, right? I mean, what are we doing, you know? Where did we go wrong, Beeb? I don't understand. Like,
I don't know, man.
You know, I know I wasn't motivational speaking at 16.
Well, look where you are now. You got a beautiful family. You got, you know, a beautiful house. You're doing well.
I don't like to brag, Beeb, but, you know, I mean.
You got two title belts hanging on your wall.
Two?
Don't worry about where you know, the past. Don't worry about where you're from. Worry about where you're going and where you went and where you are. Right? I'm going to make you
15 minutes with Omar Juarez. You're already a motivational speaker now.
That's right.
This is unbelievable. He's rubbed off on you. This is amazing.
It's contagious, Dad.
It's contagious. That's the thing about, I tell you what, that's the thing about Omar Juarez. It's contagious, isn't it? I mean, it really is. When you talk to him, he's such a positive guy. He's such an upbeat guy. It's like contagious, you know? It really is, man.
Yep.
What a good guy, man. Good interview. Catch Omar Juarez on Saturday on Fox FS1. Fox Deportes and FS1 as he fights Willie Shaw. He's knocking Willie Shaw out cold, son. And he'll be the looks like the third fight on that card. So good fights on Fox this weekend. Good fights on Fox. Yeah, it makes you excited to watch him fight, man. Because he seems like such a just a nice guy, and I'm sure he's a great guy. But in order to be a fighter, you still have to have that mean streaking. You have to be able to hurt somebody, and he's got that.
You got to be able to turn it on and off, I guess. Yeah,
he's definitely got that, man. But these guys, like I said, like you hit it on the head, man. These guys coming up, they are so polite. They're so
Good heads on their shoulders.
Great,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, great heads.
I don't think we're going to have to worry about this generation of fighters, man.
No. And the thing is, like, you know, once they get done with their careers, like, the sky's the limit for them afterwards, you know, in the ring and out, you know. So this guy, I tell you what, this guy is like, you know, an advertiser's dream, no? A sponsor's dream? I mean, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy can talk. He's got a good look. I mean, he can fight. I mean, what else do you need? I mean, that guy right there, man.
You're not seeing him going on Twitter beefing with people.
All right. So since you brought it up, let's talk about it here. Let's talk about this. So news and rumors for this week, man. And so Gary Russell and Terrence Crawford, these are two grown men, by the way, two grown men, all right, apparently got into this social media beef. They were making videos, you know, on YouTube and Instagram, I guess. I'm not sure what started the whole thing, but it has been the most entertaining part of my week, man. Mark Davis, Gary Russell, and Terrence Crawford made videos this week talking about an incident that happened in Colorado Springs. There was somebody else who made a video as well, and I can't remember who that is, but he made a video about it also. He was another fighter that was there, I guess, in Colorado Springs when this happened. I believe it was – listen, there's a lot of things going on, and some people say it was during the Olympic trials. Some people say Pan Am Games. I don't know. The one that does seems constant that it was in Colorado Springs, and there was an incident with Gary Russell was sparring Mark Davis, and Mark Davis said he got the better of Gary Russell that day. Terrence Crawford, I can't remember who he was sparring. For the life of me, I can't remember. But Terrence Crawford apparently, the sparring didn't go so well for him. And they got out of the ring. The two were talking trash to each other, Gary Russell and Terrence Crawford, I'm speaking of. The two were talking trash to each other, and then out of nowhere, Gary Russell punched Terrence Crawford in the face. Now, I don't know if it was a sucker punch or not. I'm not sure of the true definition. A sucker punch to me is like when you play that knockout game or whatever, when, you know, that stupid knockout game people were playing when they go behind somebody and hit them and they just fall. You know what I mean? To me, that's a sucker punch. If I'm looking at you right in the eye and I get hit, then that's kind of my fault, you know. But Mark Davis said that Gary hauled off and smacked him, you know. Terrence Crawford just ate the shot and looked at him and then went after him, and then they had to be separated. And that was kind of the gist of it, you know. That was kind of the gist of it. How this whole thing resurfaced, I don't really know. But Beebe, have you saw the videos at all? They're insane.
I've seen Gary Russell kind of go at him. he was talking trash to him and stuff like that. So I found that kind of entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, it was insane, man. I don't get it, man. I tell you what, I mean, these are two grown men, both have big fights come, you know, big fights on the table. Terrence Crawford, Pacquiao, Errol Spence, Gary Russell's got Leo Santa Cruz, Gervonta Davis. I mean, whoever he wants to fight, Lomachenko again if he wants it. And you guys are beefing about something that happened back, like, years ago. Like, years ago, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is wrong with you guys, man?
It's crazy.
You know? I mean, how many fights – I mean, think about, like, how many fights, like, actually go on there. You know, we're just because everybody's, you know, listen, man, people are trying to make weight. People are trying to make weight. They got fights coming up. They got a fight every day. You're getting hit in the face. Nobody's in a good mood. You know what I mean? You can't be in that great of a mood, and something's going to pop off. It's just the nature of the beast, right? It's just the nature of the beast. But to hang on to it for that many years, you know, I'm like,
crazy.
What in the world,
crazy.
Man?
It's insane, bro.
I don't get it, man. These guys, man. All right, so let's talk about it here, our train wreck of the week here. Paulie Malignaggi fired from Showtime. So Showtime fired Paulie Malignaggi, and I will preface this with saying that I think they will retain his contract, but he will just not be on the show. So they'll honor his contract. I believe they're going to honor his contract, just pay him out, and he just will stay on, you know, and not just,
Wasn't it supposed to be up this year, though, his contract?
I think so, yeah. He doesn't have that long on it. It's not like he's got, like, 5 years or anything. So, but that's what I think is going to happen. Don't quote me on that. I don't know for sure, but that's what I read was going to happen. So, take it with a grain of salt. But anyway, the whole thing started. He made some comments to IFL. This is what I heard. Now, Beebe heard something different. It was, on the interview, I didn't hear too much of it. The question posed to Paulie Malignaggi was, Devin Haney said he would never lose to a white boy. And they asked Paulie about this. And this is what Paulie had to say. He said, it's not something that great to make something racial in 2020, especially with so many racial tensions in the world. Boxing's had its course of history with certain demographics dominating more than others, right? Maybe like 100 years ago, Irish fighters were better. Then the Jews and the Italians came in. I think African-American fighters became the most dominant in the sport in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's the Eastern European fighters like Loma, Usyk that has become dominant species, have become the dominant species in boxing. I think stating something like that, what Haney said, could be very dangerous. Paulie also said something to the effect of African-Americans. He said that Eastern Europeans dominated now, not African-Americans. He said that later on in the interview, just, you know, kind of like paraphrasing what he said here. But I didn't see anything wrong with what he said. I'll be honest.
That's not the whole thing. That's not the whole
correct.
Thing.
Correct. Now, you tell me what...
Then he was going on and saying that systemic racism doesn't exist in 2020.
Sure.
And then he said that racism is not the problem in black families. The problem is that they're fatherless homes and stuff like that. And then I think he said something about the Aubrey situation, or like what was he doing or something like that. And then he just said, like, we're making a guy like George Floyd a martyr, a guy who has a rap sheet longer than
That's,
you know,
okay. So that's what he was saying. Then.
Yeah,
he was
like
talking
the same,
about the current.
He's got like a rap sheet longer than, you know, Santa Claus's bed or something like that. I don't know. He said he had like a long rap sheet, and they're
sure.
making like a modder out of them, you know, and all this and that. So he got real. He was making real racial insensitive comments, and I guess he's talking about another guy, barbershop conversation guy or something like that. He got in a racial debate with him about, you know, racism in 2020. It's like, why did it even go there? You know, why did it go there? Why did it get to that point? You know what I mean? That's the crazy thing. Why are commentators, why are people like Dan Raphael, people who are journalists, commentators, people who have, you know, jobs in boxing with networks, that, you know, big networks, why are they going back and forth and fighting with fans? That's what I'll never understand.
The best
why?
Thing to do is just keep your mouth shut on stuff like that, because none of it ever ends well. None of it ever ends well.
I think Paulie was making something like $1 million a year with Showtime.
Yeah, that's not good, man. And then Sky Sports is under they're investigating that too, whether they're going to keep him on or let him go. And the fact is that Showtime let him go, so I'm wondering if that's
well, they
would have
kept him if he apologized. All he had to do was apologize, and they would have kept him, but he wouldn't even apologize.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
not good.
Paulie Malignaggi was really ignorant and made some really racial insensitive comments. Because people who have experienced systemic racism and racism, and they hear comments like this from a guy who has, you know, who knows nothing about it, had nothing to do with it, never had to experience it. Where does he get off saying those things? You know, like, what makes him an authority on that? Obviously, he has the right to his own opinion, but you have to understand, when you say certain things, you're going to trigger and elicit responses from people who you offend. You know, you can't tell people what to be offended by and what not to be offended by. You have freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want, but you have to understand there's going to be repercussions, you know, of the things that you say, and you're going to have to deal with those repercussions. And now you lost a job over it. And then he refused to say he was sorry.
Yeah. See, that's, I don't know, man. You got to revisit that. It's just, I don't know, man. Not good. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you do this, it's never going to end well for you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. All right, let's switch gears here. Our next guest, Sulem Urbina. How are you?
Hello. Hi, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here talking with you guys.
We're excited to have you. I tell you.
I saw you on D-Style's channel, and I said, you know what? This young lady has a lot of positive energy. I want to talk to her.
I appreciate all the support. I mean, I love talking boxing, and I'm grateful that you guys are interested in speaking with me, and it's amazing, and it's what I do, so
of course,
let's
man.
Talk.
So you're 12-0 now. You're 12-0. You got two knockouts. Let me ask you a question now. One of the biggest questions we talk about here when it comes to women's boxing, and then we pose the question, how come it's not as popular as, like, say, the UFC? One of the first things we talk about is the minutes, the round minutes. You guys fight 2-minute rounds. The men fight 3-minute rounds. Would you like to see that change to 3-minute rounds?
I think as a fighter, we always want to fight more. And from my experience, I have been in the situation where I hurt my opponent, and then the bell rings, and they recover, and it just keeps happening, you know? And I keep doing damage throughout the whole fight. And I do believe that's a huge part of why there isn't as many knockouts. But there's also the fact that, you know, I don't want to fight an extra minute and get paid the same, you know? so, I'm not going to fight a minute for free.
I've never heard that. That is a great point.
What are we
going to
do? Put you on the time clock? Have you punch in and out before you fight?
I mean, I think there's a lot of women boxing is still relatively new. It's still not, you know, looked at. You know, a lot of people don't approve of it yet, and part of it is because they don't really see it. The UFC has done a great job promoting their women, you know, first before Ronda Rousey, Gina Carano, and, you know, Cyborg and all these women, they're on the spotlight. And that's what we need in women's boxing also.
You know, Sunisa Estrada and Marlon Esparza, their fight was the 3-minute rounds.
It was, and it wasn't the first one. There's been quite a few. I think Layla McCarter was the first woman to actually fight for three-minute rounds back in, I'm not sure what year it was, but she was one of the first, and it's been done. I mean, we trained 3 minutes. We spar 3 minutes. I have no doubt that I can do it, and honestly, it would get us more knockouts. I'm up for it, but like I said, a lot of people, you know, us fighters, we always want to fight more. We are physically different. That's just, you can just tell. So from the men. So I mean, I'll do whatever it is that is best for me. But I would, as a fighter, I would like 3 minutes.
I know you talked about potential matchups with Marlon Esparza and Estrada. Is that something that you're looking to do, you would want to do right away, or do you think you need a couple more fights? Do you think you're ready for them right now?
I think there's fights that should be marinated a little more, and, you know, so that we can get those good paydays and, you know, get more exposure. It's kind of, there's no point in having us fight each other right now without any of us having any world championships. I believe, I think that we would have great fights right now, but down the road with more experience and with some belts on the line, that would be huge. You know, it wouldn't be a mega fight, and everybody would be interested in us all fighting for the belts, you know? So I think it would be smart for us to be, you know, marinated a little bit and, you know, get in there. But if it happens before that, hey, I'm all for it.
So your last fight was the first fight you ever fought in the United States. Talk about fighting in the United States as compared to Mexico. Obviously, it seemed like you had a big crowd there supporting you, and you seem like the type of person you really feed off of the crowd. So I'm curious also to see when boxing continues, how you're going to fight without the crowd. Is that going to affect you? Because you're entering down the aisle there, you're touching everyone's, you know, hands and stuff, you know, you're fist bumping everybody. So talk about the difference fighting in the United States, and was it a big transition for you?
You know, it was very important for me to come to the United States, finally debut here. I believe as a fighter, you always want to come to the United States. This is where it's at, you know. I think it was very important for me to have my mother there for the first time ever, because she can't travel out of the country to see me fight. And it was the first time she saw me as a pro. I do love having an energetic crowd, but I'm also very personally motivated. You know, I don't need a crowd to be motivated. If I fight without a crowd, that's absolutely fine. I had a pretty extensive amateur background, and I did have a lot of box offs that were done privately, that where it's only the judges, the Mexican Boxing Federation, and you box off, and there's nobody there, you know, showing support, nobody screaming and yelling for you except for your corner. So I think when it's quiet like that, you can also think better, you can hear your corner better, and down a little faster. As to where the with the crowd, it, you know, sometimes you get overly pumped, and but I mean, both have their ups and downs. It doesn't matter. I'm personally motivated, and I'll get in there.
You said box. Let me jump in here real quick, because just to clarify something, you said like box offs. Are those are professional fights where there's no audience or anything like that, or how does that?
No. When I was amateur, Mexico.
I got you.
Okay, it's when I was amateur, I was on the Mexican national team, and so in Mexico, to maintain your number one spot as a national representative, you're supposed to always stay number one. So if somebody comes and wants to take your spot, they can. Request a box off, and they have to fight with you, and the winner takes that number one spot and goes off to compete international. So I did that, I don't know, 20, 30 times. So, I mean, it works out fine for me.
Wow. So, I mean, so anybody can just come up. I mean, do they have to be like a certain rank or something like that? Or just anybody can say, hey, you know what? I'm taking you out today. That's it. Boom.
You know, it's Mexico's way of doing things. For USA Boxing, they have, you know, they win their USA National Championships, and then they're the number one the whole year, and they're the ones traveling out of the country. For Mexico, you win your national, and then each state has their representatives, and if somebody's ranked amongst the top three or the Mexican Federation believes they can be better than you, then they'll make you box off. I mean, they're always looking for somebody that's better. It's a way of them keeping you on your toes,
yeah.
You know, and always keeping you on your A game.
Wow.
Now, you turned pro when you were 26 years old, correct?
Correct.
Now, did you have a long amateur career? What was the reason for the late start? Because we see most fighters turn pro like when they're 19, 20, 21-ish. What was the reason for that start at 26? Was it because of your amateur career going long?
It was a huge part of my amateur career. I really wanted to get to the Olympics. In 2012, I've been in the United States undocumented practically my whole life, and I didn't get my residency till after 2012. So I couldn't attend the World Championships to try to qualify for the Olympics. So I decided to wait another 4 years for 2016. At the end of the day, it was great experience for me because I got to travel around the world. See, the thing is, anybody can turn pro. You can grab a guy from the street, have him pass a physical, and he can turn pro.
I always say that.
Not just anybody can compete international. Not just anybody can be number one in their country and compete on that international level.
You have to make the team,
But
one frustrating thing that I hear is, you know, you want to get signed to Golden Boy. You've been trying to get a contract squared away. It makes all the sense in the world because, like I said, they have Marlon Esparza. They got Sinesa Estrada there. It makes all the sense in the world to sign you because you'd be a potential opponent. There's a lot of things they could do with you. What is the holdup? Why would COVID be an excuse to not get a contract done? I mean, obviously, fights are happening. They're going to happen. What's the holdup? Someone put a bug in De La Hoya's ear. What's going on?
Is that what they told you? They told you that COVID was the thing?
I mean, I spoke a few days ago with Robert Diaz from Golden Boy. I'm going to be having a fight date pretty soon. I mean, as long as they give me a fight, I'm fine with it. That's what they've told me, that, you know, they haven't really been in the offices. The office hasn't opened yet. But they are scheduling me to fight, and they say I'm part of the team. So, you know, I'm happy, but just wait for that fight date.
Do you need us to muscle some guys at Golden Boy for you? I mean, because we'd be more than happy to do that. I mean, we can move some people
muscle,
around, you
muscle.
Know?
I'm
all for it. Oh, man. Go ahead, Beeb.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
So when will your next fight be?
Roberto Diaz is talking about maybe September, but they're not sure yet. So he's thinking and debating about having an all-women's card in October since it's breast cancer awareness. And so he would like to do that. Golden Boy does have French on, Marlon, as far as Sinisa Estrada. I'm working with them. So they also have a world champion, Anabel Ortiz. And I believe, you know, we're all the smaller ones we're all around the same size. So we won't be fighting each other yet, but, you know, they're marinating it for when we actually face each other. And if he can get that card going for October, then I guess it'll be in October.
Now, as far as being a fighter goes, and I think this is the same whether you're male or female, as far as being a fighter, how frustrating is it to not have a fight and talk to somebody and they're just kicking ideas around? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. We'll firm it up, you know, we'll do our thing. I mean, how frustrating is that?
I mean, I think you always want to know what's going to happen. You always want to, you know, have that security. that yeah. date set and everything. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to be a professional. You have to know that, you know, this is boxing. Sometimes you can be ready and your fight falls through or whatnot. Stay ready. I stay in the gym. I've lost, I think, like 14, 15 pounds because since quarantine because guys kind of ate a lot. So I'm walking around at my normal weight now, and now I'm motivated. So, I mean, when the call comes in, I'm excited.
That's what I was going to ask you, because fighting at 112, how hard is that weight cut for you?
You know, I had my weight struggles in the past. I had some horrible, horrible weight struggles. I mean, I was like 140 at one point, and fighting amateur, you have to weigh in every single day.
Yeah.
So I would win at a tournament and I had to weigh in the next day and I was losing 6 pounds a day. Mm-hmm. So by the time the tournament ended, I would balloon up like the day of my last fight, I would be like 123 already. And by the end of the weekend, I would be like 138 and then 140. So it was horrible. And I was going through a lot of stuff. I was eating my sorrows away. It was right when my brother passed away. So that's what I was, you know, That was what gave me a little bit of comfort eating. So since then, I've disciplined myself a little bit. And, you know, quarantine had its ups and downs, but I tried to walk around 122, 123. And I just dropped 10 pounds whenever I have a fight coming up. The night before, I'll probably lose 3 pounds before my weigh-in. And, you know, I'm dry and hungry and thirsty, but it's all worth it. It's my division. I feel good, and eventually I want to move up.
Yeah.
All right, Salim, thank you so much for being on the show. Do you have any final questions?
Yeah, I got two more before we let you go.
Sure, sure.
Now, another disturbing thing that happened in women's boxing, I saw that that Miranda Adkins Singh's Estrada fight, and I thought that was horrible, horrible matchmaking. When I looked at that poor girl, she was terrified in the corner. She didn't even want to come out. She was like shaking before the bell even rang. What did you think of that matchup? And to me, that I have to say, I'm not going to blame Estrada for that, although I have to question why she would. I mean, obviously, she's got to fight to make money, whatever. What did you think of that fight? What was going through your mind seeing that horrific matchmaking? And would you ever want to fight an opponent like that? How would you feel about fighting someone that was terrified and really couldn't defend themselves? I mean, this woman was, I think, 41 years old. She had never fought. All the opponents she fought, they didn't have one win. So her opponents were winless.
Yeah.
So, I just thought that was horrible.
I think a lot of people want to put the blame on, you know, the matchmaking and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, her team took the fight. Her team wanted to step in there. She's a grown woman. She's a grown woman. She decided to step in there. Something a lot of people got to understand is a lot of boxers don't fight under those lights. I mean, once those lights hit them, it's a whole different story. And I don't know, she probably had never been on a stage like that, more than likely. For me, as a woman, you know, BoxRec can be very deceiving. I debuted against a girl that had like 12 fights, but on BoxRec it said that she was, I think, she had been around already. She fought 8 and 10 rounds already. So it was a tough first fight for me. There's a lot of things, being a woman in boxing, that's different from the men. So a lot of the times you don't know who you're fighting. You can't find video on them. It's very, very difficult. Sunisa, I think, couldn't even get a fight. I mean, none of the girls that have belts really wanted to step up. Her previous opponent didn't want the fight. They did call a lot of other fighters that I know that are good and experienced. They just, you know, didn't take the fight. Atkins was kind of a last minute thing, and if anybody's to blame, you know, it's her team. You know, her team shouldn't have put her in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Lisa did her job. But another perspective. I have another perspective of it too. Is, you know, everybody says, oh, we don't watch women boxing because there's no knockout. But when there is, everybody, you know, upset about it. Berlanga's opponent his last fight didn't throw a punch. He went down right away, but nobody said anything. I mean, Berlanga looked like a great prospect, you know? It's because it's a woman and everybody looks because they're women. You know, Ryan Garcia's opponent, Romero Duno.
Yeah.
Romero Duno went down.
Yeah.
It happens. It shouldn't have happened. Atkins shouldn't have been in there. Her team shouldn't have taken the fight.
No.
That's the way I see it.
You made some great points. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, too.
Listen, her trainers obviously knew she couldn't fight. I mean, and they knew she was going to get pasted by that girl. That girl could fight. But when she got – I mean, you know, her trainers knew that going in, you know.
Yeah.
So you can't blame the matchmaking for that.
No.
Especially her, because she's got to work with their matchmaking to make a fight. So you can't blame that, you know.
But I'm gonna say one thing. Now, you made a good point about the team. Because the team, sometimes you have to be saved. You have to save – the fighter has to be saved by – by themselves. You know what I'm saying?
At the end of the day, your team should want to look out for you.
Yeah, sometimes you have to save a fighter from themselves. And if you're, just because somebody wants to do something, like, obviously this is a different situation, but if your kid wants to do something and you know it's going to be dangerous, of course you're not going to let your kid do that. So your team is kind of your family. They're supposed to look out for you as well. So a fighter has to be saved from themselves sometimes. And by you saying that makes a lot of sense, you know. So,
and that was her husband. Her husband. That was her husband that made that fight. You know,
oh,
her
wow.
husband was the one that. I don't know if you read the article on The Ring, of the way he was doing certain matchups. I mean, I think he even matched up on one of his shows that he did. Somebody from the Special Olympics. Against somebody else. So, I mean, everybody has to do their research.
Jeez.
So,
wow. You're schooling me right now. I got to give you credit. Schooling me.
That's easy to do, though. I got to be honest, Steve.
I think a lot of people can know boxing, but once you get...
Nobody knows the inner working 100%.
It's a different story. You have to look at it a different way.
Yeah, you definitely have
obviously, Atkins shouldn't have been in there.
Yeah.
Atkins shouldn't have been in there, but, you know, she took the fight. Sunisa did her job. Had Atkins lasted more than one or two rounds, I mean, Sunisa would have been criticized. You know, at the end of the day, I'm happy that she's healthy, that she's good. She didn't take more punishment. And, you know, it was good for women in the sport. Good talk, bad talk, it's all good. I mean...
attention. It got a lot of headlines. For negative or positive, it got a lot of headlines. People were criticizing the matchmaking, but all those people criticized and they wrote a story.
Let me tell you something else. A lot of the people that were criticizing it, like I saw a lot of club show people criticizing it, and it's funny to me because I go to a lot of club shows I support, and you see mismatches like crazy. You see you know, a prospect here locally, you know, and they bring this guy from Mexico that, you know, he's just trying to collect a buck to take back to his family. You see mismatches left and right, but all of a sudden everybody's outraged. So, I mean, to me, that's hypocritical.
Well, one thing that really stands out, though, too, is Estrada, she had an interim junior flyweight title. She was a champion, you know, a champion. Is held to a higher standard. That's another thing to look at too. She was defending her silver title, WBC silver title too. So it was technically it was a title match. So it's just
a shot of the title. You know what I'm saying? I mean
all that added to the madness, if you will. That's what made it even worse because
there's a lot of blame to go around. I mean, I think you have to blame the matchmaker. I don't think there's any question about that because he made the match. I think you have to blame her team because they know her and they knew she wasn't ready for that. And I don't know how much she got paid to get beat like that on national TV. It's just, I mean, but her career is over now. I mean, it really is. She's done.
Yeah. Well,
how many fighters don't you see on these big networks that you have no clue who they are, but they're using them as an opponent for a male?
A lot of them. We joke a lot, like it's like professional wrestling. You know, they have like the squash matches and everything.
I want you guys to talk about every single one of them and tweet about them and
listen,
everything, because that happened.
I told Eric a story one time. You know,
I'm not going to do that, of course. You know,
I'm going to tell you a story that I told Eric once. You know who Peter McNeely is, right? The guy that got knocked out by Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Maybe when I tell you he got knocked out, that was Mike Tyson's first comeback fight after he got out of jail. Peter McNeely.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, he's from Massachusetts, where I'm from, and this guy used to literally take people out of the stands to fight. He fought a guy that had gym shorts on and running sneakers on one time, and I've seen it. He used to fight in armories and stuff like that. So trust me. I got on my soapbox. I hate mismatches. Now, obviously, you got to build a fighter in the beginning. But once a fighter is at a certain level, I know you need tune-ups and stuff, but there's got to be a level that you just don't go below. You know what I mean?
I agree. I agree completely with you. Honestly, it's so difficult right now to even have a – you know, find somebody that can travel, that's training.
No, I know.
You know, it's different times. I mean, Atkins shouldn't have been in there, period.
No.
She shouldn't have. But at the end of the day, her team should not have put her in there.
I guess that's the biggest point right there. Because it starts with her team, and it should have ended with her team. Because if the team doesn't allow her to take the fight, then the matchmaker gets taken out of the equation. You actually won this debate. I'm gonna concede that you won this debate.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You beat the Beeb. How's that?
She could be on the panel, Beeb.
Yeah,
very
right.
Good, man.
Yes,
she knows what she's talking about.
Let me ask you one last question, because I've seen this picture that you have pinned on your Twitter page. I've seen this video. That you have pinned on your Twitter page and you're dancing and stuff with the bikini on. What's that all about?
Uh-huh.
Explain that.
You Twitter stalker, what are you doing? What's the matter with you?
I'm not criticizing it. I'm admiring it.
You're talking about boxing.
I'm admiring
it. What's
wrong with you? It's all part of the marketing. When?
I think, hey, look, I'm an okay looking woman.
You're a good looking man.
You could say that again. You're all right.
You're not okay. You're better.
Yeah, I think you're better than okay.
You like older guys?
She said not like her father's age, but
yes,
like.
Yes, I like an older guy.
Say again?
I'm married to an older guy.
Whoa.
Swing and a miss. Beeb looks like that girl that just got knocked out on national TV.
Yeah. I'm 50 years old.
Oh, you look really young. You look good.
Thank you.
Those filters we use.
Good.
Those camera filters we use.
But go ahead and explain that.
So I know I'm a good looking woman. You know, I have no problem portraying that I'm very feminine outside the ring, and you know, there's nothing wrong with showing that. You know, I'm a cute girl, and I don't have to always look rough and rugged with boxing. You know, outside the ring, I am a woman, and that's been since day one. I've always been very feminine. I love weighing in bikinis. I get dressed up for my weigh-ins. It's fun for me. You know, I live in the gym every single day. I have Sundays off. So Sunday's the only day that I get to, you know, dress up a little. And, you know, it helps me and ups me, you know, it helps me feel pretty. And it's something that a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people judge me for, you know, oh, look at what she's wearing at this weigh-in and this and that. Hey, you have your style. I have mine. If you want to show up looking like a hot mess, that's on you. You know, I'm my own way. I know that me wearing heels and wearing bikinis and wearing makeup and looking pretty doesn't take away from my skill. My skill is there, you know. I'm good at what I do. As you can see, you know, my body's well trained. You know, I look in shape all the time, and why not show it off?
Listen.
Agreed. I mean,
if you got it, you might as well use it, right?
Exactly.
That's the way you got to look at it. We're not going to hate on you for that. I just wanted to hear your explanation of that. What was it all about?
The dancing videos is something that, you know, I started, I think like a year and a half ago, I'm not sure. I love dancing cumbias, and I just, you know, just showing up some footwork right there, that's it.
All right. I like the confidence, too. I like the confidence.
Love it. We got to have her back on the show. You know, I would love to have you back on the show to just do a show. I mean, to just, like, talk about boxing, talk about the fight.
What we can
talk
do.
About, you know.
Next time there's a big female fight, right? There is a couple.
Why about just a big fight? Why does it be a big female fight? You know, she's a boxing fan. Stop being a sexist, babe. You're being a sexist.
But we have to focus. Why can't we focus one show on the female fighters? Why does it have to be about the guys all the time?
We can. Whenever that show comes up, you know.
Because there's a big fight. Katie Taylor and Prasoon, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a big fight. That's a big
one.
We
should have her on the Sunday after the fight.
Katie Taylor?
I'm in.
Yeah.
That'll be
great.
That's a great fight.
Because I know you're a huge boxing fan.
That's right.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll have you on.
I'm all for it. I love watching and supporting other women, and I hope they all do great, because at the end of the day, it's only going to help our sport. You know, the women coming up are going to be even better.
Now, Esparza and Estrada had a beef, and they were beefing on Twitter. Do you have any Twitter beefs going on right now, or are you not involved?
I don't have any beef with anybody.
Why not? Let's start one. We're going to start one. Let's go ahead. Who would you like to fight? Who would you like to fight?
I don't have beef with anybody, but I can't say I get along with Esparza either. You know, she's a very special person.
You said you're going to knock out Esparza on this airwave, on these airwaves, my show. You said
how many
I'm going to knock out Paul
Esparza. We fought three times, and she won every time.
But she got lucky, though, right? I mean, she got lucky. You said she got lucky. I think she got lucky. You know what? You've got no chance. This is a different game. Pros are a different game.
The pros are a different game. I think, you know, when it comes to the pros, when we do face each other, I'm going to take the win, and I have no doubt about that.
You said you were going to knock her out. That is insane.
She's a big trash talker, too. Did she talk trash to you in the amateurs or no?
We used to get along pretty well. We used to get along, okay. And then something happened on Instagram, and we kind of got into it. And
what happened on Instagram?
Over.
No Twitter beef, but an Instagram beef.
Yeah, Instagram beef. What happened?
I think it was last year when my contract was ending with Sanford Promotions. Sanford offered me a fight with Marlene Esparza, and it was for her little she has a NABO title, I believe. And had I won that fight, my contract would be extended another 3 years.
Uh-oh.
So I didn't take the fight. I wanted my contract with Sanford Promotions to end. And I didn't take the fight. And she went off on Twitter acting like I just wanted no part of her. So
Sula Marvina just called you a baby. All right, Marlon Esparza, that's it. She said you were a baby. All right? That's it. That fight's happening. That fight's going down now.
I think you match up well with her. I think you match up well with her style-wise, because you kind of like to create space and stuff, and she likes to get close. And I think it would be a great chess match between you two.
I think, honestly, I think Sunisa beating her this last time has made Marlene a better fighter.
Yeah.
And for some reason, every time Marlene and I fight each other, we bring out the best in each other.
Yeah.
And the night that we do face each other, I know there's going to be fireworks. It's going to be entertaining. And
that fight's going to happen. That fight's
going to
happen.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of trash talking, too.
Of course it's going to happen. We just made it happen.
I bet you that fight happens next year. By the end of next year, I bet you that happens.
I wouldn't doubt it.
That's going to be...
knocking her out.
That's going to be your final fight of 2021. That's my prediction.
There it is.
Yeah, I'm not playing matchmaker for you right yet, dude.
tried earlier, but, you know.
I like it.
Okay. All right, Salem Urbina, you will see her back here on the show soon, I promise you. Salem, it's been great talking to you, man. We appreciate you coming on, and hopefully they get you a fight soon, and, you know, you're back at it.
You'll be all right.
Yeah, you've got to get on Golden Boy, too. You know, get me on the roster pretty soon.
I'll talk to some people over there. I'll make some calls to Oscar and, you know, see what he has to say.
You got to talk to Gomez.
I'll talk to Oscar. I go to the food chain.
He's running the show over there.
Sounds good to me.
Oscar's busy
with
other stuff.
Thank you guys for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for coming by. Appreciate it.
She was awesome, man.
I told you.
She was awesome.
She was good, man. I told you.
Jeez.
I told you you were going to like her.
Look at Beeb striking out on national TV, man.
You got to shoot your shot, though.
You have to. You got to shoot your shot. Hey, you're not the fastest in the game. You're not the youngest anymore, but hey, you still got game. There you go.
Her husband's probably going to be like cussing me out now.
Her husband's on his way to Boston as we speak.
You can't talk to those dudes anymore, man. You got that goofy guy over there in the back swinging, hitting on you.
Her husband's probably punching walls, booking his flight to Boston right now. You're going to kill Beeb. All right, let's see here. All right, a couple more news stories here. Okay, so this was interesting, man. Teofimo Lopez holding out for more money. So Mike Coppinger is talking about he's reporting that Teofimo Lopez is holding out for more money in his fight against Lomachenko. Said that Lopez already turned down a $1.2 million offer to face Lomachenko. Lomachenko's already signed for the fight. He's ready. He signed the dotted line for $3.25 million. Apparently the fight is in jeopardy, so much so that Teofimo is already looking for other replacements. So not good, guys, not good. And I'll tell you right now, I don't get that. In this climate, I don't get that at all. I really do need to get some shutters in here or something. I gotta block this sun.
I'll send the decoration team down there.
Yeah, send your decorators down here and see what they can do with this office. Yep. It's a mess.
We'll get that squared away for you.
Complete mess, Beeb. Complete mess. I don't know what Beeb Industries is doing over there, but, you know, we could spruce up this office.
Oh, We got that COVID money.
That's right. We got that COVID small business money. That's right.
We got the small business loan money.
Is Teofimo right for holding out here?
I'm going to say something, Eric. And B-Style said this to me.
But D-Style
told me this, and I think he's right. I think they offered him 1.2. I think that he'll probably squeeze out maybe a couple hundred thousand more, and then he'll take the fight. I think the fight's going to happen. I think he's just playing. You know, this is kind of a smart move on his part, and I'll tell you why. Because Top Rank's catching a lot of heat for not putting on great fights. Okay? And this was a big fight that everyone's looking forward to. And it's very close to the date that it's going to happen. So he's kind of putting them in a pickle, so to speak, trying to squeeze more money out of them because he knows that I think he has a little bit of leverage because of the climate, because everyone's been starving, particularly from Top Rank, to put on a good fight.
Especially from Top Rank, no?
Yeah, because they haven't been putting... So this is the one big fight that everyone's really, like I said, not to beat a dead horse, they're right. Really looking forward to this fight. So he's going to shoot his shot, too. He's going to try and say, I don't fault anyone for trying to get more money. I believe 100% that he thinks he can win the fight. I think he's going to win the fight. So they may end up giving him 1.5, 1.6 million at the end of the day, and the fight gets missed. They'll probably throw him another $300,000. I don't see them not doing that.
This is a big fight to let go, Beeb.
The same thing Andy Ruiz did. And we applauded Andy Ruiz for doing it.
It's a big fight to let go of, put it that way.
Here's the thing. Andy Ruiz wasn't, you know, Andy Ruiz became the champion. He held out for more money, whatever. He got it.
Yeah.
Teofimo Lopez is a champion as well. He's not, you know,
he's
a champion. He just came off a huge win. You know, and this is a fight that a lot of people think that he has a shot to win. This is a fight that a lot of people want. You ask anyone that's a diehard boxer fan right now, this is the fight they're looking forward to most this year.
It's the fight of the year for me. Fight of the year for me.
More so than Fury Wilder 3, because a lot of people
nobody's looking forward to that. Come on, man.
A lot of people think that Fury's just going to steamroll. At least this is the most competitive fight that we're going to have this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
This could turn out to be fight of the year.
Yeah. Notorious said Andy Ruiz has the titles, though. Well, so does Teofimo. Teofimo has titles, too.
Teofimo has the title, too. Do you have a case? So.
Who is it? Somebody in the chat, let me see here, said, is Pacquiao going to fight McGregor? I think it was Paccio. Yeah, Mark Paccio. Says, is Pacquiao going to fight Conor McGregor? There's nothing concrete there. Conor McGregor, I guess, posted something in Pacquiao's native language. I think it's Tagalog. I don't know. Whatever they speak in the Philippines. And I think the translation was, I accept. I don't know what the deal is with that, but I will tell you this. It would not shock me. It would not shock me if that fight happened. Wouldn't shock me.
He's trying to fight. Bob's trying to make Pacquiao versus Crawford.
Yeah, he's trying. But, Pacquiao's his own guy now. You know, he doesn't work for Top Rank anymore.
So
and
funny.
Let me see, what fight makes more money, though? What fight generates more money, Pacquiao McGregor or Pacquiao Crawford?
Pacquiao McGregor.
That's simple math, son. I mean, that's crazy. You're talking about, like, crazy money right there. Way more than Terrence Crawford, you know.
Pacquiao's crazy enough to fight him in the cage, too, because Pacquiao knows martial arts.
He doesn't know it that well, tell you that. He better see him boxing, man. I wouldn't mess with McGregor in the cage, that's for sure.
No
chance, son. No chance. Speaking of big fights, on November 21st, Errol Spence and Danny Garcia is set for November 21st. Love it. And it will be on Fox pay-per-view. A venue has not yet been chosen because, quite frankly, we don't know if there'll be any spectators allowed for that fight. You know, just like they've been doing them now, I don't know if there'll be any spectators there. So, who knows? Don't know. But all we know is the fight signed, sealed, and delivered November 21st. Listen, I'm not going to the fight anyway. So, listen, I don't care. You know, I don't care what platform it's on. I know I'll watch it. That's about it, man.
You know another fight that I'm really looking forward to?
What's that?
You're going to think I'm crazy. Tank Davis versus Leo Santa Cruz.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. That's a good fight, right?
I think Leo Santa Cruz is going to win.
Listen, man, if he comes in at 130, I favor Santa Cruz. If Tank Davis comes in overweight, then I got to favor Tank Davis.
He can't even make 135.
No.
Both titles are on the line, though. 135-pound title and 130-pound title.
Yeah, but
both titles are on the line.
It wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me to not see him come in at 130. Wouldn't shock me at all.
Well, the fight's scheduled for 130.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you're on Tank Davis's team, you're a team, right?
Yeah.
Why would you take that fight at 130? And why would you allow both titles to be on the line?
Sulem just said Tank will probably lose on the scale. I agree. I couldn't agree more.
He's not making 130.
I don't think he's going. I think he's purposely not going to make 130.
And
I think you're 100% right.
I don't want to. I'm going to do a beating the odds with B breakdown on this fight because I have a lot of key points. I don't want to give up too much. Look at Tank's last fight. Look how inactive he was in that fight. Look how few punches he threw. Santa Cruz throws like 1,000 punches a fight.
That being said, though, you know, I know he's a high-volume guy and he comes forward. That could fall right in the Tank's wheelhouse.
Well, here's the thing, though. Santa Cruz showed a different wrinkle in the second Frampton fight. Did you see how he boxed and moved from the outside in that fight? Santa Cruz is a very versatile guy.
Very good fighter. A lot of people, they don't give him credit for boxing. Nobody gives that guy credit.
A lot of people thought he had no defense. He was just a swarmer.
Yep.
And then Then when you saw him fight Mahrez, he outboxed Mahrez from the outside.
Yeah.
Outboxed Francis from the outside. And he's gonna box Tank from the outside too.
Right.
Tank's a mid-range guy. He's shorter. Santa Cruz is gonna fight. He's gonna fight on the outside, and he's gonna move. He's gonna use movement. He's gonna fight a smart fight.
It's gonna be good. Yeah, he can't fight. I agree with you. I don't think he's gonna be able to fight like he, you know, like we're accustomed to seeing Santa Cruz fight. He's got to fight him like he fought Frampton.
But here's
that's
the thing.
Gotta be the fight.
Here's the thing. Tank can get smothered on the inside. This is another thing Tank does. He'll go to the ropes, and he'll just lay on the ropes, and he'll just catch shots. And he lets people – like, Tank's not a great inside fighter either. He's a mid-range guy.
Yeah.
So if Santa Cruz could smother him on the inside, cover, go deep in the pocket, if Santa Cruz stays out of the mid-range, which he can do, he's in great shape.
Right.
He can go all the way in and smother him, or he can fight him on the outside. You know? So
that's it. It's a good
Santa
fight.
Cruz,
it's a very good fight.
Santa Cruz is a plus 250. So whenever you've got a fighter who's under 3-1, the odds makers think he's live. A lot of people think he's live right now. I think Tank's going to lose.
I think, like I said, man, if Tank comes in at 130, I'm favoring Santa Cruz. If Tank comes in overweight.
Here's why you can't favor him. Even if he comes overweight. I'll tell you why. Because he comes over in overweight. That means he tried to make weight, and even though he tried to make weight, he failed. Okay, so what happens is when you try to make weight, you deplete yourself. Then you gorge yourself. After that, you become so sluggish. When you put on too much, what's gonna happen? Tank's gonna blow up the night of the fight. He's gonna be too heavy, and he's gonna be sluggish. And I just Tank's not a big guy. Like he's not. Tall, he's not long.
My thing is, I don't think he has any intention of making the weight.
No, but
that's what I'm saying. I don't think he depletes himself. I just don't think he has any intentions on making that weight.
Well,
that's what I think.
I think he's going to be sluggish. I think he's going to be too heavy.
Possible.
I think he's going to be sluggish. That's just
possible. We'll see. We'll see what happens, man. But yeah, I think we both like Santa Cruz. Like I said, if the fight takes place the way it was contracted, I favor Santa Cruz. I've always favored Santa Cruz in that fight. Yeah.
So what if Tank steps on the scale when he's 132?
You know, a lot of this is the thing, man. A lot of this we have to look. This is the kind of thing that we could talk about, but we have to see him on the scales. You know what I'm saying? We got to look at him on the scales. Remember Ruiz when he got on the scale versus Anthony Joshua? You know, I looked at him and I said, he ain't winning. You know, I said, there ain't no way that guy is winning.
That sombrero weighed at least.
That he had weights in his pockets, and turns out he didn't have anything in his pockets but cheeseburgers.
That shirt was real heavy, too.
Take his shirt off at the weigh-in. He was like, I knew it was over, son.
That was made of really high-weighted flannel, that shirt.
Joshua got on the scale. He looked like sculpted, man. I mean, he looked like he was carved out of granite.
That shirt weighed about 5 pounds. That pants weighed about 3 pounds, and that sombrero weighed about 10 pounds.
Those sombreros are heavy. Those sombreros, the ones that he was wearing, those ones with the sequins on, they're heavy hats, man. All right, let's go to the phone line here. 773, you're live. There's 2773, so you're live.
That's Chi-Town?
How the hell y'all doing?
Hey, Bill.
What's up?
Man, I'll tell you what. Pauly Malignaggi, my favorite commentator, fired for speaking common sense.
I can't hear.
Not allowed to speak common sense in this George Orwellian communist utopia.
I can't hear him there.
You can't hear him?
No.
Really?
Turn it up, huh?
Can't hear him.
Hang
Why
on.
Not?
Let me see something here. Yeah, we should be able to hear you here. Everything looking fine.
Beep can't hear me,
sound.
Huh?
Uh-oh. Odd. Yeah, I'm hearing, like, no sound. You guys can hear me, but they can't hear you. Give me a second. Give me 1 second. Let me see if I can figure this out here.
Take your time. Right.
Everything looks good on my side here, yeah. And nothing?
I can't hear.
Gary, can anybody here say something? This is Kevin from Chicago.
Hello, hello. Mic check, 1, 2.
All right,
two.
Nobody can hear him? Yeah,
no.
Mic check, nothing?
Nope.
You can't hear the caller? Ah, it's terrible, terrible.
What happens if you hang up, and call back in? You think it will make a difference?
Well, we can't because the episode's ended.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's Blog Talk. I hate Blog Talk. Did I mention
says,
how much I hate
Blog Talk?
This is outrageous.
Yes, we can.
Okay, can you? Okay, so can we hear him or not?
No, we can't hear him.
Hello, hello.
Georgie's saying yes, we can. What's the deal here? We got to figure something out with this Blog Talk.
Georgie can hear it. Georgie can hear him.
I can hear you and him. Okay.
Yeah, Georgie can hear it because he's on the line.
Oh, Georgie can hear because he's on Blog Talk. That's right. Okay.
He's on Blog Talk. Okay.
All right. Well, guys, there's nothing we can do.
Nacho can hear him. Is Nacho on the line, though?
Nacho, are you on the line? He's 805. I think Nacho's 805.
Yeah, is he on the line?
Oh, they can't hear me on the
Is Nacho on the line, too?
Hang tight here. I believe 805 is Nacho.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm on the line. That's why he can hear.
That's why you can hear him. People that are on
can hear him because he's on the line. All right, guys. Unfortunately, nobody can hear you on the show. I'm the only one that can hear you and because I'm on Blog Talk and everything like that. So, Kevin, we're going to have you go. We're going to have you call back. So, I'll tell you a little bit about what Kevin was saying here. Kevin was saying that basically he